In Baghdad, meanwhile, Jay Garner was off to an uneven start as the head of the reconstruction effort. His initial moves were making Ahmed Chalabi uneasy, and the Iraqi exile had better contacts in the U.S. government and in the media than the retired general did. Garner found that he had a particularly difficult relationship with Chalabi as well. "Very tense," he said. "He didn't like me." The reason for the mutual unease, Garner believed, was that Chalabi thought the control of Iraq would be turned over to him. "I think he'd been led to believe that by Pearl and Fife," Garner said later. And Garner didn't like that idea. "I thought he was a thug, very sleazy." When he heard a year later that Chalabi allegedly had been passing intelligence to the Iranian government, I thought, no shit. Chalabi, for his part, was doing his best during this period to undercut Garner. The problem with Garner was that he was employing Ba'athists in senior positions, and the U.S. press got hold of that, Chalabi later said. They went ahead and put in the New York Times that Ba'athists were being made to run the university, Ministry of Health. That created a big fuss with the United States, because the U.S. policy was de-Ba'athification. Chalabi acknowledged that he was pushing this view very hard at the time. Also, even as it occupied Baghdad, the U.S. government was still undecided on the basics of what it planned to do there. Most notably, officials went back and forth on the issue of whether to maintain the Iraqi military. The U.S. military generally advocated keeping the Iraqi forces relatively intact. "We'd been briefing, 'Keep the Iraqi army,'" said a military intelligence officer. "It is solid, it has structure and discipline, and credibility inside Iraq." In mid-April, Abizaid strongly recommended to the Pentagon that a substantial Iraqi army be established immediately, according to an internal summary of a secure video teleconference. This interim force would have three divisions. The U.S. Army at the time had just 10 for the entire world, and would take over internal security functions as quickly as possible, the document stated. A subsequent memo noted that there was an urgent need to maintain order, suppress various militias, put an Iraqi face on security, and relieve burden on coalition military. Wolfowitz, who participated in the video teleconference, expressed concern about having the Iraqi army perform internal security missions, but he and Abizaid concluded by agreeing to start up a force and worry later about its mission. By month's end, Central Command staffers were hard at work on this new Iraqi corps, which they inevitably acronymized as the NIC, or NIC, not knowing that the sound was Arabic slang for fuck. When several weeks later this was pointed out to U.S. officials, the planned organization was renamed the New Iraqi Army. Garner's team began to work toward the goal of assembling Iraqi Army units, talking to former officers and getting their advice about how to go about it. At the same time, there was growing unease back in Washington with Garner's performance. Condoleezza Rice was told that "Garner just isn't pulling things together," recalled Franklin Miller, the National Security Council's staff director for defense issues. On the night of April 24, Garner was standing in the looted mess of Saddam Hussein's main palace downtown, broken glass under his shoes, when Rumsfeld called to tell him that a retired diplomat named L. Paul Bremer III would be coming in as a presidential envoy. "He asked me to stay on under Bremer, but I said that wouldn't work. He asked me to stay on for a transition, and I said I would."